Members, we are going to start. Representative Abrams? We don't have a quorum. We won't move your bill right yet, but we might as well begin to discuss it. And it always takes a little time for people to get here when you have a rescheduled meeting.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, it's always a pleasure to be down in education finance. House File 864 is directed at a problem that more and more Minnesota school districts and charters and privates are experiencing literally on a yearly basis. And that is, as our population gets more diverse, and as more and more people have special dietary requirements as they come to school, the current program for school breakfast and lunch money doesn't recognize the difference in costs necessary to provide for the special dietary needs of our students. House File 864, with the amendment, creates a special two-year pilot project which will provide for a differential based upon the actual cost of providing breakfasts and lunch that are consistent with religious tenets to schools with a population of at least 20% who have these special dietary restrictions. This doesn't only apply, as you may think, to private or even charter schools. It's my understanding that there are public schools that now have over 20% daily admissions in which students have the special dietary requirements. And it is not only for the Jewish faith with kashrut and the Muslim faith with halal. I'm sorry if I butchered that, but it's also for Catholics. As, I learned growing up in St. Louis Park, which when I went to school was one-third Jewish, one-third Catholic, and one-third Protestant. So fairly familiar with some of these issues. I have with me today leaders of religious educational institutions and religious institutions throughout the state who can talk to you about the special dietary needs of students and what House File 864 would mean towards being able to meet those special requirements.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. I'm Joel Waxman. I am the financial officer at Torah Academy. I'm also an ordained rabbi. What we've been experiencing
Welcome,
at our
rabbi. Go ahead.
What we've been experiencing in our school is an ever-increasing number of children who are eligible for free and reduced lunch. In the last month, we picked up 8 new students, all of whom were eligible for free lunch. We have looked at prices and we've determined that the cost of the principal items that go into the daily lunches, the chicken, the beef, the cheese, I'm going to ignore the milk even though that's also much more expensive. That's the least of my problems. The chicken is running somewhere between 180 and 200% of what regular chicken costs us. The ground beef is about 150%. The cheese is also at about 150%. What we're asking of the state is that the state provide some subsidy for the cost of us to feed these children who are on the reduced and on the free lunches. And we presented this last year, and what we're looking at essentially is our cost runs approximately 20% over what state cost was last year on average, and we would hope for some relief in that area.
Go ahead.
And as a result of this increased population, we feed these kids, and we're not asking you to do anything for those kids who can afford to pay for their lunches, but for those that can't, which seems to be an ever-increasing number, we would appreciate what help the state could provide for us.
I just have to ask the staff here a question. This has not really come up before. First of all, I'm not sure how we define religious beliefs, so I'm not quite sure what would qualify as religious belief. Certainly, being Jewish or Muslim or Catholic is a religious belief. I'm just wondering what else could be end up being called a religious belief. And the other thing I was curious about, do we now subsidize lunches in private schools?
Madam Chair, a member...
Free and reduced?
In answer to your first question, maybe I'll pass on that and let the witnesses speak to that. To answer the second question, the school food service money goes to all schools in the state.
Okay.
Goes to private charters and public.
Okay.
Madam Chair, to answer your question, I'm Shepard Harris with the Jewish Community Relations Council. Your question is the same that was brought up by the Department of Education, and so therefore, if you notice in the amendment, what we do is we offer to apply this pilot program to the current school year, to schools that currently do provide the religious meals. Therefore, the definition has already been determined as to which religions... Which students require religious dietary meals and which ones do not. So the school districts and the schools have already made that determination. And so the amendment will help resolve that question.
Just a second. Since we do have a quorum now, I'll move House File 864 before the committee to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and then ask you, Representative Abrams, would you like to have A1 moved?
Absolutely, Madam Chair. That would be great.
So, do you want to speak to that at all?
Madam Chair, the A1 amendment puts the bill into the status that the advocates of the bill have talked to the Department of Education and others to take care of a couple of the issues relating to your questions regarding what would qualify and what would not. So... it was put together with the suggestion, I believe, of the Department of Education.
All right. Any questions, members? Otherwise, I am going to move Amendment A1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. And we have a question from Representative Clinton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just help me understand, are there kosher meals currently served as part of the hot lunch programs in the public and private schools right now?
In our school,
Rabbi,
the entire kitchen is kosher, and all the meals that we serve are kosher and fit that standard. What we're asking you to do is help us out with the incremental cost of kosher food over non-kosher food.
And Madam Chair,
Representative Abrams,
it is not just private schools that have this phenomenon. I know that at least the Fridley School District and the Hopkins School District, I found out today, have to provide kosher meals and meals that are prepared in accordance with halal for not only Jewish students but Muslim students and others. So it's not just a private school phenomenon, which is why the cost is, I believe, $60,000.
Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Representative Clinton.
Thank you. Is the cost of the meals, the religious-based meals, are they for kids who are not free and reduced lunch, are those the cost of those meals more to the student than if they had gone with a regular meal?
In our school, they don't have...
Rabbi Waxman.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. In our school, they don't have an option. Those that pay $3.50, we charge the elementary school kids, the upper school kids, it's $4. And, of course, you know, the reduced meals are 40 cents, and that's all that we get for that meal, and the three meals, of course, are free.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Mr. Harris, you alluded to the amendment as helping define the types of religious meals. Is the definition then in statute, in rule, or would it be found in current practices at the schools?
Mr. Harris.
Representative Biskins, it's based on the determination of the school, at the school district or school level. They're the ones, based on working with the student population, they're determining which religions, which, based on the religious desires, religious needs.
Madam Chair.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Harris, would the schools then have those written out in policy, or would it just be practice that would define those? Is there a written document that says X, Y, or Z, or is it just the practices of the schools that would determine the lunches,
Mr.
meals,
Harris.
Et cetera?
Madam Chair, thank you. I could find that information out for you. From my understanding, it's more of a practice, but it may vary from school district to school district. They may actually have the policy. From what I understand with the Hopkins and Fridley school districts, what it requires is additional research and time to find out what types of meals they could supply to the students with the religious needs. So it may be in policy and practice.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Abrams, what would your thoughts be on the constitutional issue here, the state subsidizing religious belief? We've clearly got language in this proposed bill along those lines. Is there any precedent established by the Supreme Court, or what your thoughts are?
Madam Chair, Representative Newman, it's a good question, but there are two precedents. First, there is a differential for nursing homes in the state of Minnesota because there are people who have dietary restrictions based upon religion in nursing homes, and there is a small differential paid for that. Secondly, in our state prisons, Representative Newman, we passed a law, the chief author of which I believe was now Governor Pawlenty, dealing with halal in 2002. So that meals in accordance with the Muslim faith are provided to prisoners in our correctional facilities. So there are two precedents currently in state law, Representative Newman.
Representative Newman.
Just a quick follow-up, and thank you. I'm totally unaware of that, but has the Supreme Court weighed in on this issue that you know of?
Representative Abrams.
Madam Chair, Representative Newman, I am an attorney. And as you, I have areas of expertise, and this is not one of them, but we certainly can ask House Research to look into it.
Did some of the rest of you wish to testify before we take any more questions?
Good evening, Madam Chair. My name is Salah Hayali, and I'm the principal of Adaman School, only private Islamic school in Fridley. And we serve 340 kids. One of the main reasons why kids join us, our school, is because we are able to accommodate their dietary needs. But that came at a cost for the school. We have to pay extra money, make sure that they get the food that they can eat. Currently we serve 65% of our students are on free and reduced lunches, and the school cannot afford continue to pay for those kids. The cost of halal food is even more expensive than kosher food because the suppliers are very few, and it's costing us more. Currently we are incurring about 8,000 extra annually for the food that we serve for our kids. And recently we tried to contact a contractor so that we can outsource the program, and they are telling us we can provide meals for $3 per meal per day per child. The state
of
the
per child?
$3.
Three?
Per meal per child. That's what we were offered. What we get reimbursed for is $2.37 right now. So considering the number of kids who are on free and reduced lunch and the number of days that we have for the school year, it amounts to $18,000. And the school cannot afford to serve those kids mm-hmm. who need this accommodation.
And what, Mr. Harris, can you just tell me what the kosher lunch that your students get, what is the cost of that? Oh, Rabbi Waxman?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Our present cost per meal is approximately for this year is $2.64 per meal. Our out-of-pocket cost.
So that's for a student that gets a free meal. It's $2.64.
That's correct. Okay. Thank you.
All right. And Mr. Kroll, did you wish to add to that, Dr. Kroll?
Oh, Madam Chair.
Dr. Noel, pardon me.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Peter Knoll with the Minnesota Catholic Conference Education Director, and I'm here today to speak in support of House File 864 as well. We believe that the accommodations of special dietary considerations is a logical extension of our state's tradition for inclusivity for students of all backgrounds. And as an organization that has consistently called for the recognition and celebration of our rich cultural, ethnic, and religious diversity in our state and nation, we applaud the commitment of our policymakers in seeking these types of solutions that are in the best interest of this broad mosaic of our Minnesota families. And it's wisdom the legislature has appropriately allocated funds to accommodate special learning, language, physical, and cultural needs of children in Minnesota. And in our view, this bill is consistent with those accommodations. So we urge you to include the special diets legislation in the final education omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We have another question, Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative Abrams, I want to start off by saying I strongly support this bill, all right, and would like to see it move forward and actually become part of state law. My concern is the two issues you mentioned, nursing homes, a good one, and I was here when the governor moved forward that dealt with prisons. But in those two institutions, there isn't the specific direction that we find in our state constitution known as the Blaine Amendment, which says that no money, nor shall any money be drawn from the treasury for the benefit of any religious society. So I'm concerned that this bill, as it's currently written, might be challenged, and then the benefits that I think we all agree to goes away. So I'm wondering, does the state allocation here go to the schools themselves, or is there some way where we could, one way that has been found constitutional is when the dollars go to the families to make their decisions. I'm wondering if there is some way we could look at this bill and if you've given any consideration to making that change or modification to move forward.
Representative Abrams.
Madam Chair, Representative Biskins, I certainly don't hold myself out as an expert in how these things can be financed. I would suspect that House Research could do the research. But what you're talking about here is a formula in which all schools, public, private, charter, etc., are able to benefit. And all you're saying, and I don't think that it benefits any religion, is that if you incur these costs because of the needs of your students, the student will be funded to this level, or your school will be funded because of the student mix. I really don't see this as falling against the establishment clause or anything else. All you're doing is saying we have a school, and some things happened in school, like you're going to have breakfast and you're going to have lunch at school, and we want to make sure that you're able to eat. So I really don't see this as really an establishment or even a subsidy question, because it doesn't benefit a church, it doesn't benefit a mosque, it doesn't benefit a synagogue, it benefits a kid who wants to eat.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Abrams, you may be right on if you could make the case that it's synonymous to providing transportation or providing textbooks, et cetera. You may be correct. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there any further questions for either the representative or the people here to testify? All right, we do have one person who requested an opportunity to testify against the bill. Mr. Berkshire? Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Berkshire.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is August Berkshire. I'm the public relations representative for Minnesota Atheists. The official short description of this bill states, special school breakfast and lunch diets based on religious beliefs of the students provided and money appropriated. In 1971, the U.S. Supreme Court developed a three-part Lemon test for laws dealing with the establishment of religion. To be constitutional, a law must have a secular legislative purpose. Its principal effects must be to neither advance nor inhibit religion, and it must not foster an excessive government entanglement with religion. Furthermore, our Minnesota State Constitution declares that nor shall any money be drawn from the Treasury for the benefit of religious societies. House File 864 fails all three parts of the Lemon Test and the Minnesota State Constitution. It's our understanding that currently all schools, whether public or private, receive the same per-student stipend for meals. And this seems like a neutral law, and that all schools and students are treated equally. However, this bill will require us to spend extra government money for a solely religious purpose. There are additional constitutional problems with this bill involving discrimination and entanglement with religion. In my conversations with authors of the House and Senate versions of this bill, I was told it was directed at private religious schools. We heard different from the previous testifiers. But of course, the language in the bill doesn't limit it to private schools. Limiting it to private school students would treat religious public school students unfairly. Sooner or later, a religious public school student will sue for extra money and special meals as well. And the previous testifier said that if a public school met this 20% threshold, and maybe that would be a public school, what about a religious public school student in a school where it only had a 10% threshold? Well, that student would be denied religious meals and could sue on grounds of discrimination. If this program were enacted in the public schools, it could bankrupt our school system. A few years ago at Dartmouth College in New Hampshire, and I provided you a handout of this story, one of their restaurants decided to cater to Orthodox Jews, Muslims, and Hindus. The restaurant ended up spending $250,000 to build three separate kitchens. They had five separate sets of cooking utensils, each color-coded with a different color of spray paint. Because, you know, what touches the dairy can't touch the meat, and in Hindu, what touches the vegetables, the knife can't have touched the meat, things like this. So they had all these different utensils. And although they didn't go so far as to have rabbis, imams, and other religious leaders in the kitchen, they very well could have. I don't think this is what the authors of this bill have in mind for our public schools, but nothing in this bill prohibits it. If public schools chose less costly, less orthodox religious meals, they would be favoring one version of a religion over another, a further violation of the First Amendment. It would also be unconstitutional religious favoritism to limit this plan to only Jews, Muslims, and Hindus. I provided you with a chart showing a number of religions and their dietary restrictions. The monetary costs, excessive entanglement of church and state, and promotion of religion involved to cater to these religious diets are clearly unconstitutional. And finally, there's no per-meal cap on this program. How can we be sure that meals won't cost taxpayers $20 each? There is a monetary cap of $60,000 per year for 2 years on the pilot project, but after that, this program threatens to become a monetary black hole. Amending this bill to cover only private schools would not alleviate most of the problems I have raised, and it would still be unconstitutional. If students at public schools or private religious schools are being poorly fed because their religious food is more expensive, whose fault is that? With freedom comes responsibility. With freedom of religion comes the responsibility for believers to pay for the religion of their choice. It's not the government's duty or option to subsidize religious practices. While we sympathize with the goal of feeding all Minnesota children, This bill, unfortunately, is an unconstitutional means of achieving that end. We respectfully request that you vote against House File 864. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Are there questions for Mr. Berkshire? Seeing none, are there any further questions for the original testifiers and the author? You have some closing comments, Representative Abrams.
I do disagree with constitutional analysis. I don't pretend to be an expert, but when I think about my experience growing up in St. Louis Park, where a third of the students were Catholic, I think we had fish sticks every Friday for 13 years in school.
That's why
I don't eat
too.
Fish sticks anymore. So I think that there's kind of a rule of common sense that goes along with this as well, and it's a two-year pilot project. It doesn't have an open and standing appropriation. And I would suspect that the Department of Education will be able to track this very carefully. I don't suspect that our friends who are here today are going to be having very many $20 meals for lunch for their kids. They just want to make sure that their kids have the same lunch opportunities as every other kid.
All right. This bill, House File 864, I will renew my motion that 864 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And we will go on. Thank you, Representative. We will go on to House File 1474, another one dealing with food. We're all going to be hungry by the time we're out of here. Representative Demmer. Representative Demmer, do you wish to move your bill, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, yes, I'd like to move House File 1474, move to pass, and be included for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, please. How are you doing?
Do you have an amendment, Representative Demmer?
I do, Madam Chair. We have Now, I have the First Amendment, the A1, I believe is my amendment. Actually, did somebody else drop that off?
We have
A2.
We have A1 and we have A2.
Okay, the A1 amendment, I believe, would be my amendment, Madam Chair. A2 is not mine.
Okay.
I would move the A1 amendment.
All right. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Would you like to address your bill and your amendments?
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 1474 basically is allowing schools to make a choice. To make a choice to have more healthy, more wholesome, if you will, lunches in four areas: fresh fruits and vegetables, offering whole grains at least once a week, a healthy a la carte, and some different choices in the milk and also evaluation. And Madam Chair, if I would, I've got a couple of testifiers here. I'd like to talk about the bill from their perspective and what they're doing. And also, of course, Madam Chair, I should add that if schools would choose to meet these criteria as is laid out in the bill, then we'd look at 10 cents per student additional funding also. So, Madam Chair, if I could, I'd like to introduce them. Madam Chair, we'll start with Polly. Podpeskar? Mm-hmm. I said that right?
Thank you.
Go ahead, Ms. Podpeskar. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Polly Podpeskar. I am a licensed registered dietitian. I am the food service director for the Grand Rapids Public Schools, and I also serve as public policy chair for the Minnesota School Food Service Association. Members of our association are made up of food service directors, dietitians, cooks, and cafeteria employees. And we work hard to provide meals to Minnesota school children that are nutritious, low in cost, and appealing. to the students, and this is quite a difficult balancing act. The vast majority of school districts cannot cover the cost of school lunches through the traditional combination of student payments, which is the lion's share of our funding. It's comprised of 55% of our funding, federal funding, which is 40% of our funding, and state funding, which is 5%. Small in comparison, but yet a very important source of funding for us. According to the Minnesota Department of Education, we lose an average of 43 cents for every school lunch that we serve. Most school districts make up the gap between the cost of producing a school lunch and the revenues comprised by selling a la carte items. And many of the most popular a la carte items, like potato chips, for example, are foods that have little nutritional value. And while we think we're doing a good job providing the menu combination of protein, fruits, vegetables, breads, and milk, that's compromised by the necessary a la carte sales, which helps to keep us whole. We're asking the legislature to help us provide improve the nutritional content of the food served at school by providing an additional 10 cents per lunch to the school districts that agree to provide healthier food choices. Additional funding will help schools to reduce our dependence on a la carte sales and help to make ends meet, and it will enable us to provide more nutritious but costlier items such as fresh fruits and fresh vegetables, whole grains, and low-fat milk that's packaged in modern packaging. Let me quickly give you a couple of examples of the additional cost to some of the healthier items. A fresh apple, for example, costs 16 cents, and a comparative amount of applesauce, 11 cents. The fresh apple is 45% more. It also has twice the fiber, 2.5 times the vitamin A, 4 times the vitamin C, nearly twice as much vitamin K, and 50% more magnesium than the applesauce. A half a cup of raw broccoli costs 25 cents. The same amount of frozen broccoli is 15 cents. That's 67% more for fresh broccoli. In addition to the higher purchase price for the fresh fruits and vegetables, they have a shorter shelf life, which could also lend to the higher cost of those products. A whole grain hamburger bun is 1 or 2 cents more than a white bun. And a number of studies have been done outside of our state in regards to milk packaging and the effect of milk packaging on milk consumption in the schools. And I just happened to bring in a couple of the typical packages. This is what's used in most of the schools now, and it's been used for years and years. It's a gable top milk container. And this is one that's used in one of the fast food establishments that I stopped and picked up this morning. These are a hit. The kids just love them. They're consuming more milk, and they're kind of jazzy packaging, and so we really like to move in that direction. We have a lot of competition in the schools. Milk isn't exactly the number one choice of students, but it is the beverage that's part of the National School Lunch Program meal components. Kids also prefer consuming milk when it's served nice and cold. And the forced-air milk coolers that we'd like to have in the schools are much more costly than the typical milk coolers that are used now that don't keep the milk quite as cold as we'd like to keep it for the kids. When we were going around visiting some of the legislators, one of the legislators asked me why we couldn't just raise the price of the school lunch and have the students pay for the increased cost themselves. And believe me, if it were that easy, that's something that we would have done. It would have been a lot easier than coming before you and your friendly group, but it is a little humbling. Making these changes will probably cost schools more than the 10 cents that we're asking for. And so we are expecting that we'll have to rely on local contributions in raising the school lunch price to the paying students. We do have to be careful when we're raising school lunch prices, because when that occurs, we see a drop-off in the participants. And when our participants drop off, then it's not only bad for the students, but it's bad for the program on the whole, because we rely on economies of scale. In addition, in schools that have high free and reduced participation, when school lunch prices are increased, you don't have any additional participation from free and reduced students. When lunch prices increase, it's just an increase to the paying students. The rising number of children who are overweight and obese is a serious public health issue. Yet another study sounding the alarm came out last week, and it made the front page of both the Pioneer Press and the Star Tribune. We put copies of those two articles in your packet. And in your packet, you also have a letter of support for this bill from the American Dietetic Association. It is clear that we need to start teaching our children better eating habits, and school nutrition programs want and need to be part of that solution. We ask you to help us to do that. Thank you.
Thank you. And did you also wish to testify, Ms. Knudsen?
Yes.
All right, go ahead.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Sherry Knudsen, and I am the Student Nutrition Services Coordinator for the Rochester Public School District, and I also serve on the board of the Minnesota School Food Service Association as the Vice President. Rochester's student population is around 16,500 students. We serve these students in 26 different sites across the district. 80% of the students are participating in some form, either in the USDA reimbursable meal or in an a la carte reimbursement. We have open campus for seniors and for juniors that earn open campus privileges. With the national concern of obesity and juvenile diabetes, we knew that we needed to make some serious changes to our school lunch program, and we started doing this 3 years ago. We took a closer look at some of the a la carte items that we are offering students based on some of the numbers that we can retrieve from our itemization reports, and we looked at some of the shocking numbers of the items of things that we were selling to students. We decided to change the thinking. We developed a student task force. We invited in many of the manufacturers 3 years ago of some of the more nutritious products out there in the market, and we started to do our homework. We cut four of the top-selling volume items that first year, and when students returned to school that fall, those items did not appear in their a la carte selection. And we were a little bit nervous. We were somewhat prepared for their questions, but all in all, I would have to sit here today and say that we need to give credit where credit is due, because students really can learn to make healthier choices if they're given that option. Since then, 3 years ago, we've continued on our quest to introduce healthier options each year. We've taken a gradual approach to doing this. For example, we have reduce the frequency of how often that we offer French fries in our high school. We used to serve them 5 days a week. This year we're only serving them twice a week. And when we do serve French fries, we're serving the best product that we feel we can buy out there in the market. We're buying a zero trans fat fry, and we're frying it in a zero trans fat oil. Again, we've reduced the frequency to twice a week, and we're trying to serve that fry in our high schools just a little bit healthier. Again, keep in mind that we do have open campus, and our students are allowed to leave. We're featuring fresh fruit in our elementary schools. We're trying to educate students on fruit of the month, and we've featured some really different fruits this year, kiwi, some different melons, the carambola fruit. At the secondary level, we're offering an extra piece of fruit for free this year at the end of the cashier station. We're trying to encourage the students to take fruit for free if they buy a reimbursable meal. We're tracking this free fruit to see if it can, just by offering it for free, if it does encourage them to take it. We're trying to get them to look at fruit as a dessert and maybe not as a part of their reimbursable meal option. Many of the sites are using whole grain breads instead of white breads. We're trying some pilot sites, even in our elementary sites. We're making grilled cheese sandwiches and whole wheat bread, our hamburgers and chicken patties in some of our sites. We're serving them on whole wheat buns this year. We're making these incremental changes in our program because we know that we need to. However, making these changes has come with a cost. For example, we used to serve a 12-ounce milkshake at our high school, a 12-ounce milkshake. Now we're serving a 4-ounce serving of yogurt, zero fat and zero cholesterol. We're basically paying about the same amount of money per ounce. However, we can only serve 4 ounces versus 12 ounces. Again, this is an extra cost for our program, but we really do feel it's one of the initiatives that we can offer to the students. Reception has been very good. I talked a little bit about the fries. Just for a cost perspective on the fries, I can purchase just a regular case of fries at $11.50 a case, or I can choose to purchase fries that have zero trans fat at $14.50. We could choose to fry these French fries in just a regular vegetable oil that costs approximately $17, or we can choose to purchase zero trans fat oil that costs about $27 per case, or per 35-pound canister, which is a difference of $10 right there, just for the difference in the type of fry that you're maybe choosing to produce a product in. Fresh fruit, as Polly mentioned, unfortunately, fresh fruit costs more than canned fruit, especially in the state of Minnesota in the winter. We don't have the luxury of some of the warmer climates where they have fruit a little bit more at their luxury. In Minnesota in the wintertime, fruit can be very expensive for us in schools to purchase. Our program costs in Rochester per meal run higher than the state average. We, too, depend on a la carte sales to carry the difference because of the reimbursement rate. The proposed funding of 10 cents with this bill would help reduce the overall expenses and would help to minimize the dependence on a la carte sales, which has traditionally been somewhat unhealthy in school districts. In Rochester, we have been very lucky to have the support of the Mayo Clinic and the Olmsted County Public School Coordinated Health Committee as we move forward and have been making some of these changes. A parent just emailed me last week asking if the elementary lunches in Rochester were zero trans fat free, as that is the buzzword right now, is trans fat. And I had to stop and think about that before I answered this parent. And no, not even close at this point are our meals, even with the initiatives that we're trying to take, are they zero trans fat free. Our hope with your support in this increased funding is that we can begin to look at some of these obesity issues and try to address them in our programs. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Knutson. I have one question here, Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, has the A2 amendment been moved and or adopted?
Not at this point, no.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I just have concern with that one. Plastic, I think, is a petroleum product, and wood is made here in Minnesota. So just a concern about that. But I more to the reimbursement rate, Representative Hammer, at this point, according to the fiscal notes, for a regular lunch, the reimbursement rate comes to 29 cents, and that's 21 cents from the federal government and 8 cents from the state government. And this proposal in front of us more than doubles the state's commitment. Is there any similar federal legislation moving forward along this healthier lunch vein? Can we expect the federal government to be doing something in the very near future?
Representative?
Madam Chair, Representative Biskins, I'm not aware that there is a direct federal injection coming or a similar movement. As you're aware, our food service programs are largely federally run. They have the federal guidelines and that sort of thing. My thought in doing this, Representative Biskins and members, the fiscal note does show about $10 million a year starting in fiscal year 06 and moving forward. It is pretty significant, there's no question. Here in Minnesota, we have oftentimes exceeded expectations, both federal government as well as other places. When looking at this legislation was brought to me, the first thought I had in my mind, of course, was how in the world would we do that? We have other things going on. You know, in answer to your question, there may be some things federally, there may not, but I thought it's time for us to step out and at least bring this legislation forward, give these people a good opportunity to talk about what they've been working on. I applaud their efforts. Personally, I like the direction they're taking. I like the choices. I like the idea of the low-fat milk. And I think it was, and Madam Chair, thank you for hearing the bill and giving us a chance to put this message out there. I think it's excellent. So, Representative Biskins, members, we know this might be a steep one this year. Maybe we can do part, maybe come back later again, but I think it's really, really important, and I think the work that they're doing is excellent.
Thank you very much. I have one more question. Representative Clinton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm very supportive of serving healthier meals in the schools. In fact, I send my kids to school with lunch because they don't quite meet my standards at home. But the question I have is about, first, what is the reimbursement rate for lunch costs, for a la carte menu items? And the second question is, when I look at the list of requirements that the district needs to meet, says that they need to meet all six? And when I read through all six, it seems like you could still have a pretty unhealthy meal 2 days a week and very healthy meals 3 days a week, because you only have to have different fruits and vegetables three times and one whole grain item, which you could kind of serve on the same day. And then you have the milk, which are pretty much offered already in terms of offering skim and 1% milks. So I'm just wondering, when they have to meet those, if there are unhealthy meals twice a week, or it would be a twice a week, but we're reimbursing every school lunch at 10 cents a week. Is this because we're really reimbursing lunch three times a week at 20 cents a piece or 18 cents a piece?
Madam Chair.
Bob Tesker.
Madam Chair, Representative, our meal pattern is quite a healthy meal pattern. If you compare it to any restaurant or compare it to the bag lunches that come into the school, or just look at it as a standalone menu, it's a very healthy outline with protein, fruits, vegetables, breads and grains, and milk. So we're really not serving unhealthy meals, and we really believe that we're part of the solution and not part of the problem, but it does need to be tweaked. And a la carte has zero reimbursement. So the a la carte sales are sales that, unfortunately, we rely on to make up that 43-cent gap that we're losing for the healthy school meals. Number one on the list that you're looking at for offering at least three different fruits and vegetables for school lunch, and at least one of them must be fresh, that's daily. That's three different fruits and vegetables every single day, one of them being fresh, because we feel if we can put a variety out there, there's got to be something that the kids will like, and there's got to be at least one of the three that they'll select. And for whole grain breads, we said at least three times a week, put that out there. We think that we'll have to go through not an entire generation, but we'll have to go through a learning curve where students won't be afraid of whole grains, and they'll think that it's good and normal and just easy selection. It's likely that schools will offer those every single day. We were careful not to overload these requests for the schools, because schools are already struggling, already having a hard time making ends meet. And then for the low-fat milks, I think most of the schools already have made that transition, but what we want to do now is compete a little bit with some of the other beverages that are offered in schools and try and entice the students to take milk rather than some of the other things that they're excited about.
A follow-up, Madam Chair?
Quick follow-up.
Thank you. Well, and I think I was just saying that healthy versus unhealthy based on some of the verbiage you guys used earlier when you were talking about some of the meals that you serve. Because I don't see anything on here about zero trans fats and kind of those other indicators or characteristics that can start, that can be easily measured or used as a standard. And it seems like a lot of these things are already done by a lot of the schools in terms of offering fruits and vegetables, at least one of which may be fresh. I mean, the school I taught at, they always had a fresh orange or apple every single week, sometimes twice a week, and it's definitely on the a la carte. And so a lot of these things were already there. And so I guess I was just trying to figure out what the distinction was here between the meals we already are subsidizing versus what would change and how the standards would be used. So thanks.
Thank you. Representative Heidgerken.
I would, if we are just finished discussing the previous amendment, I would move to include also the A2 amendment to this bill.
You explain your amendment.
Yes, and in regards to this has already been touched upon. There's a good sample put up from Representative Diskins and right in front of Representative Demmer, but I'm giving you an option. Representative Diskins, I know where you're coming from. If you read my amendment, I also have what most of your restaurants have. And if you go to your country buffets, or not all, if you eat at the college campuses, they have bulk containers. So you can use a plastic glass and go get your milk, and that could be a plastic container. But it's cheaper. And this bill, if you include this, Representative Demmer, this amendment, would save money in the milk program. You'd be able to serve cold milk, and you would have one more option. You wouldn't have the milk containers run about 11 cents a piece. The bulk is cheaper than the carton in itself. So it'd be a win-win situation. So I'm just giving you another option. I'm giving them another option, and I think this is something we need to look at. Thank you.
All right. Is there any discussion on the amendment?
Madam Chair.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I think Ms. Podcaster will have a couple comments also. I guess my first thought, Madam Chair, is I think school boards and their lunch programs should have the option of serving the milk the way they think is appropriate. I guess I would not favor this because of the way it words. It says they must do it in these ways, and I don't want to get into that level of management. Just from the from my perspective of trying to tell school boards what to do, but Ms. Podcaster may have a little better perspective on that from a regulation standpoint.
Am I reading this incorrectly, or is it an either or? In single service plastic containers, by the glass, or from bulk containers?
Right.
Any other comments or questions? Very quickly, please.
Okay.
We are running very short on
okay.
time. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative, we're always excited when someone is on board trying to do something good for school food service, but We're a little bit afraid, too, about a flat-out mandate. And with our bill, we're looking at allowing some flexibility and some incentive. The one concern I have, other than what was already mentioned, is that we're very heavily regulated. As a matter of fact, we're over-regulated on portion sizes. We're required to serve 8 fluid ounces of milk every day. And when we're working with K through 12 and short lunch periods, short breakfast periods, I think spillage is a concern. I think even just getting your exact 8 ounces, and trust me, when you're inspected, it has to be exactly 8, not 7.5 or 8.5 ounces. So just makes policing it a little bit tough for the point of service or the person at the end of the line, making sure that the meals are reimbursable.
All right. Seeing no other question, Representative Dorn, did you have a question to the amendment?
Not to the amendment.
Okay. To the bill. All right. All those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
Amendment does not prevail. All right. Representative Dorn, you have a question?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. And to anyone, I'm just trying to make sure I understand what the words mean in terms of offering at least 3 different fruits and vegetables as part of the daily lunch menu. As a school teacher and a student, I think I've eaten probably as many school lunches as anybody in the room. And we have about 5 lunch lines. Would this mean that we would offer the fruits and vegetables in every one of the 5 lines, which may have 5 different, you know, meals or selections, or would it mean that it would just be offered in one of the 5 and that would be part of the daily lunch menu?
Actually, Ms. Podcast, excuse me, Madam Chair, Representative, we would want to make an honest effort to really market and merchandise the healthier of the choices to all the students in all the lines.
Okay.
And not just do it to meet the requirements, but truly be on board to try and help address obesity issues and the health of the Minnesota school children.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to know, you know, that I understood what it meant or what it was doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. And seeing no other questions, this bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Demmer, you have another bill on the agenda. Can we do this in 10 minutes? Thank you very much, ladies.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, this next bill, I think we can do relatively quickly, Madam Chair.
All right. Because we have to be out of here. You know, there's bonding meeting in here at 6. We have to be out of here. Plus, I promised people we would be out because of the early childhood event going on tonight at the Radisson, which some members wish to attend. Representative Demmer.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 746 for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill. Madam Chair and members, basically what this does is allows the divisions of the state high school, the administrative regions of the state high school league, to use either the state auditor or a private. Madam Chair, I've got a DE1 amendment. I'm sorry. I got to delete all amendments. It's H0746DE1. Like to move.
All right. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, as I was saying, basically what this does is allows the administrative regions to use either the state auditor or a private CPA to do the audits of their regions. If they perform the audit, if the private CPA performs the audit, the state auditor could require additional information. I'll let, I got Roger Aronson here to speak to the bill.
Representative, Mr. Aronson, I'm sure you wouldn't wish to be a representative.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Roger Aronson. I represent the Minnesota State High School League. I also have Rich Matter, who's the Director of Financial Affairs for the league, with me, and I want to talk about this bill a bit. Just for background purposes, so that you understand, there's the main high school league itself, and then we also have 16 regions that run our regional tournaments. Those 16 regions operate on an annual budget each of about $300,000. That's their receipts and expenditures. In 1986, the state auditor was given the responsibility of auditing the league itself That's the function that they've carried out since that time, and the current state auditor thinks that's an appropriate deal, and so do we. The administrative regions have actually gotten a bit too small almost for them to audit, and so what we're doing here, and this is with the consent and actually the development pieces of the state auditor as well, is saying that we can use local licensed CPAs to do these audits. We think it's going to save us a little bit of money on this as well. The state auditor would retain the ability to go back and look at these audits. Jonathan Papik has asked me to tell you that he's here as well. He's one of the communication directors for the state auditor's office. And what they have told us as well is that this is going to free up the state auditor to do some township school districts and other types of audits that they're more interested in doing than these small regions. So, Madam Chair, would you answer any questions that you might have?
Mr. Aronson, is the price the same whichever way you go?
Madam Chair, we think it's going to cost us a little bit less. The state auditor, in their fiscal note, they want to point out that they feel their fees are very reasonable, is the phrase that they use. So, but we think it's going to work out. A wash or cost us a few dollars less.
Okay. Representative Groning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Aronson, I'm trying to remember what the legislative auditor recommended in this regard. Did we just make a change based on that recommendation and that we're now moving back, or wasn't that part of that?
Mr. Aronson.
Madam Chair, Representative Riling, I think that's a good and appropriate question. The state auditor, or the legislative auditor, did not recommend the administrative regions be audited by the state auditor. It was just the league itself. And I think that's 85 or 86 as well, when that came out.
Madam Chair.
Representative Grana.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Aronson, is this the way it's always been then, the way it is right now, and now we're changing it, or has there been some back and forth on this?
Representative Riley, this change, I think, and I'm guessing somewhat, but I think this change was done in the 90s to have the regions audited by the state auditor. It was not part of the major overhaul in the mid-80s where the open meeting law, the Data Practices Act, the audits, and some of the other structural changes in the league were made by the legislature. This was not part of that.
Representative Groning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the committee members that are left, I do support the way this delete all is, but I would not have supported the original bill. What I recall, and I couldn't remember if it was just good government folks or if it was the legislative auditor, but I know that we started auditing the regions. The legislators started requiring that because we weren't getting all the information that we needed to be making sure that the dollars were spent as wisely as possible for the students. So I would not have supported at all not auditing them or not having them available to public perusal. But as long as my last question then, and if it's affirmative, then I have no more questions or any more concerns. Madam Chair, Mr. Aronson, is this the way it is right now acceptable to our auditor, the state auditor?
There's somebody here from the state auditor's office. Would you like to make a comment? It's John Papik?
Yeah, for the record, my name is Jonathan Papik. I'm the communications director and legislative affairs person for the state auditor's office. Like you, Representative Greiling, we had some concerns with wanting to be able to review or to request more information should an administrative region choose to go with the private CPA, but the delete all amendment addresses our concern, and we do not oppose this as it currently is before you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Are there any further questions? Well, this is quite amazing. I think we're actually finishing our bills in the time we allotted, which is highly unusual, but I love it, and I hope it will be a trend that will continue. So we will. This bill will be laid over for possible inclusion. We will see you all after your. We'll see you again tomorrow. Representative Meslow.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to say I'm headed straight to the Radisson. I'm going to go straight to my car from here. If anybody needs a ride, I'd love to offer one. I'd also like to move the minutes.
And Representative Meslow even moves the minutes. He is in a hurry. Any corrections or additions? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Minutes are approved, and the meeting is adjourned.